Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production.
Now available on Apple Podcasts,
Podcast One, Spotify, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Today on the Charlie Kirk Show, I asked the question, is slippery slope a logical fallacy? We dive into that and the recent controversy at the New York Times. Email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. Get involved with Turning Point USA at tpusa.com, tpusa.com. Please consider becoming a supporter of the Charlie Kirk Show at charliekirk.com/support, charliekirk.com/support. Become a monthly supporter, and we will have an exclusive video call just for our monthly supporters starting next week. If you want a signed copy of the MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review, screenshot yourself doing that, and email us those at freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. An important episode in store. Buckle up, everybody. Here we go.
Charlie, what you've done is incredible here.
Maybe Charlie Kirk is on the college campus.
I want you to know we are lucky to have Charlie Kirk.
Charlie Kirk's running the White House, folks.
I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA.
We will not embrace the ideas that have destroyed countries, destroyed lives, and we are going to fight for freedom on campuses across the country. That's why we are here.
Slippery slope. I'm sure you've heard that phrase before. Slippery slope is oftentimes used in arguments, when someone says, because of one thing, it's going to lead inevitably to a chain reaction of things in the future. I used to use slippery slope as an argument in eighth grade and throughout high school. And then a teacher who taught logic at our high school and was a very nice individual pointed out, correctly, at least at the time, that a slippery slope argument is a logical fallacy. So if you look up slippery slope argument in your search engine, it will go through the types of logical fallacies that there are. And slippery slope is one of them. Essentially, it says, you said that if we allow A to happen, then Z will eventually happen too. Therefore, A should not happen. This is according to yourlogicalfallacyis.com. And a lot of college students, a lot of high school students use this as a way to understand logical fallacies. If you don't know what a logical fallacy is, it is a type of argumentation that is incorrect and is logically flawed. There's also red herring arguments. There's also the fallacy argument. There is the appeal to emotion, which the left uses. There's the false cause. There's the straw man. There's the middle ground. There is the Texas sharpshooter. You probably don't know that one, but that is cherry-picked data cluster to suit your argument or found a pattern to fit a presumption. There's anecdotal logical fallacy, appeal to nature, begging the question, black or white, genetic, you get the point. So there's all sorts of different logical fallacies. But the slippery slope one, recently, I've asked myself, is it really a logical fallacy? Is believing in a slippery slope actually a logical fallacy? So let's go again back to the textbook definition of what a slippery slope is. It's like saying this. If we allow there to be some form of gun control, eventually the left is going to want to take away all of our guns. Again, in almost all forms of education, they will say you cannot use the slippery slope argument. It is a domino fallacy. This was coined by Jacob E. Van Fleet, who said, quote, precisely because we can never know if a whole series of events and or a certain result is determined to follow one event or action in particular. This is actually wrong, especially when you're dealing with the left. And so I'm not saying that the entire idea of a slippery slope argument is inherently a logical fallacy. I am however telling you I have a lot of problems with totally rejecting the thought process behind dismissing the slippery slope, because we have so many pieces of evidence around a slippery slope or as a domino effect right here in our country. Take abortion, for example. First, it was Bill Clinton who said safe, legal, and rare. Those of us that were pro-life said, well, this is just going to result in more abortions. This will result in more children being slaughtered in the womb. And now we see that's exactly what's happening. Now we have infanticide that is legal in the state of Virginia and New York. Gun control, I used that one previously. First, they said it was background checks. Now it's Joe Biden who wants to appoint Robert Francis O'Rourke who wants to confiscate all of our guns. How about healthcare? in healthcare. And Barack Obama said, we need Obamacare, which he promised was not socialized medicine. Now Bernie Sanders wants socialized medicine. How about climate change? First, they wanted to cut emissions. Now they want a multi-trillion dollar Green New Deal. The same is now true with defund the police. The same is always true with these radical revolutionaries. They want to attain some amount of progress off a cliff. And so the same is always true with radical revolutionaries. When running a business, HR issues can kill you. Wrongful termination suits, minimum wage requirements, labor regulations, and more. HR salaries are not cheap. I can tell you that from personal experience at Turning Point USA. They're an average of $70,000 a year. That's why I am so excited about Bambee. It's spelled B-A-M-B-E-E. It was created specifically for small business. You can get a dedicated HR manager and craft HR policy and maintain all your compliance, all for just $99 a month. With Bambee, you can change HR from your biggest liability to your biggest strength. Your dedicated HR manager is available by phone, email, or real-time chat. From onboarding to terminations, they customize your policies to fit your business and help you manage your employees day-to-day, all for just $99 a month. Month to month, there's no hidden fees. Cancel anytime. You didn't want to start your business because you wanted to spend time on HR compliance. Let Bambee help and get your free HR audit today. Go to Bambee.com/Kirk right now to schedule your free HR audit. That's Bambee.com/Kirk. That's BAM to the BEE.com/Kirk. Now, there is a very hard to understand, but incredibly instrumental philosopher, and his name was George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. He was born in 1770 and died in 1831. To say that his readings are difficult to understand would be the understatement of the century. He writes in highly complex, very hard to compute language, and German to English translation is difficult on even a good day. It's incredibly difficult with George Wilhelm Friedrich Hegel. However, Hegel wrote a book that might be one of the most important pieces of philosophy since Plato or Aristotle, that might actually be solely responsible for both Nazi Germany and USSR. It is called The Phenomenology of Spirit. It was written in 1807. Hegel described this piece of work as an exposition of the coming to be of knowledge. I have attempted to try and read this, and I have failed. I have actually really good friends who have masters and doctorates in philosophy, and I have asked them to help me learn Hegel and guide me through it. It is just such a tough read. I was not comprehending it. And so this, Hegel came after Kant, and we can get into more philosophy, and I know a lot of you enjoy it when I go into it. The reason I'm mentioning it, though, is that Hegel developed something that he did not even coin this term himself, but it is widely known as the Hegelian dialectic. The Hegelian dialectic, in some ways, is almost like a March Madness bracket of the constant forward push of human civilization. Without getting too far into the weeds here, the Hegelian dialectic, if applied to modern day, explains the radical left more so than any other piece of philosophy. And quite honestly, Hegel might be one of the most consequential philosophers in world history. And the irony and the tragedy is that Hegel himself would not approve of the application of his philosophy. Hegel was a Christian. He was a believer in God. Hegel himself would be saddened about how his work was corrupted and manipulated. And if you look at Nietzsche, he himself would say he was mostly inspired by Hegel, not to mention Rousseau and so many thinkers that came in the mid-1800s that developed the modern left as we know it today, especially the European left that took over the entire continent in the mid-1930s. And so now consider this article from The Atlantic's Adam Harris, who says this: first comes police reform, then comes everything else. Americans took to the streets to protest police brutality, but the need for systemic reform runs much deeper. So if you use the Hegelian dialectic, you have a thesis and an antithesis, or an antithesis, depending on how you pronounce the word. And the way the Hegelian dialectic essentially works is then a synthesis comes out of the thesis and the antithesis or the antithesis, and the synthesis is a sum of both parts. Very complex, very hard to understand. However, let me try to explain it for you. Essentially, it is the argument that humans and civilizations are going to try to continue on this onward trajectory, that the slippery slope is not a fallacy, it's actually factually inevitable. That especially when you're dealing with the left and how they try to continue to almost progress us off a cliff, it is not unfair to say that they want to abolish the police so they can also abolish civil society. Now, using the idea that the slippery slope is a fallacy would dismiss this altogether. I no longer believe that the slippery slope is a fallacy. I don't. I have too much evidence to show that is exactly how the left operates. Now, mind you, I do think that the slippery slope is a fallacy when you talk about conservatives, because conservatives are not trying to always endlessly and relentlessly push towards progress. Because for conservatives, we want to improve society around the laws of nature designed by nature's God. So we actually are content at a certain point when we're able to say, yes, people have natural rights under the law. Yes, we now have made murder illegal. We're happy with that particular victory. We have protected your right to worship. Whereas the left, they will not be happy with that. The left wants to instead abolish religion altogether, or to try to continue and relentlessly have a motivation that is pathological in nature to destroy modern society. And so this Atlantic article, I think, articulates this better than any other piece of writing that I have seen recently, where they admit that police reform is nothing more than a gateway drug to a leftist totalitarian takeover of American society. So again, the title is First Comes Police Reform, Then Comes Everything Else. So Adam Harris is saying, let's just get police reform, then we can fundamentally destroy our civil society. He continues by saying, people are on the streets this summer over the murder of George Floyd, but the current racial reckoning in America goes far beyond lethal policing. People are on the streets because black students are 5 times more likely than white students to attend highly segregated schools. Because black unemployment is regularly twice the white unemployment rate, because racist housing policies have locked black families into unequal neighborhoods and out of the prospect of building wealth. But to go back, black students are 5 more times likely than white students to attend highly segregated schools. What does that even mean? First of all, does he mean that they're more likely to attend all black schools? Or are they more likely to attend schools where races are segregated? We don't have segregated schools. So does he mean that black kids are more likely to attend schools where they mostly have people that look like them? Isn't that what the left wants? They want black-only dormitories. They want black-only content creators at YouTube. Adam Harris links to an article from the Economic Policy Institute on explaining what it means, saying that black individuals are more likely to go to black-only schools. But isn't that what they want? Again, you look at so many colleges and so many universities where they've created black-only dormitories, black-only math classes. I don't think that's a good thing, but the left is acting as if that is progress. So CHOP, or CHAZ, the former country that once existed in Seattle, they had black-only food lines. They had black-only speaking rights. The entire idea was that black people should be given preference or segregated within their newly founded country. Adam Harris continued by just writing more rubbish, by saying this: white Americans have stolen black Americans' land. They have stolen their property, stated as if it's just a fact. And so then he links to a article that's written by The Atlantic from September 2019 called The Great Land Robbery, the shameful story of how 1 million black families have been ripped from their farms. And it goes on and on. It's a very questionable argument historically, and I reject the premise that white people, as generalized as every single white person in the country, have stolen every single black person's piece of land. Incredibly racist, actually, to say it. So Adam Harris says, in some places, there's a 20-year life expectancy gap between white and black people. Okay, let's just, all these discrepancies can be explained not by race, not by color, instead by, were you raised by a two-parent household? That's what it comes down to. Were you raised in a stable family environment? If yes, higher likelihood to succeed. If no, lower likelihood to succeed. You read every single one of these grievance, oppression Olympic type articles written by the left, they time and time again blame racism as the single, only, and the contributing factor as to why black people have fallen behind in America. I never say that racism does not exist. I do say, though, it is not even close to the predominant reason or even a major reason at all as to why black Americans are not doing well. The major reason is the destruction of the American family and the Great Society Act passed by Lyndon Baines Johnson, where women married the government instead of marrying men. By marrying the government, they became addicted to government programs, where white liberals came in with government subsidies and subsidized single motherhood, and then sent children to failing public schools run by public sector teacher unions. You repeat this cycle over a couple decades, you all of a sudden have a fatherlessness rate upwards of 77% in the black community, according to the Washington Examiner. And so the left looks at all of these reforms and all of these conversations as the beginning of a much broader and diabolical agenda to destroy our country. And so, yes, when I say that they first want to abolish the police, then they want to come for everything else, I'm actually not engaging in a logical fallacy. I'm reading off the title of the article on The Atlantic. And so this is a very important point, because the left wants to continue to endlessly progress our society into chaos. They want to create disunity where there is order, and where there is chaos, they want to continue that chaos. They want to do this for a couple reasons. When there is chaos, there's a license to control people. Where there is chaos, politicians and the ruling class elite that otherwise might not have been very important in the general conversation or the contribution of decision-making all of a sudden become incredibly important. Also, when there is chaos, the people who are actually suffering have no choice but to appeal to a higher ruling class authority. Please save me, Maxine Waters, because I can barely get by. It creates the leftist ruling class almost in a messianic state, where they are so important they almost become semi-deities on earth, which in reality is one of the primary objectives of the American left. It's what Mao wanted to do. It is what Pol Pot wanted to do. And this is all part of an agenda to try to achieve socialism. You ultimately need to seize other people's purpose, property, goodwill, and virtue by coercion or force. Sports are coming back. That's right. Major League Baseball is coming back, I think, on July 23rd, opening night. And as they come back, you have to make sure that you know about betonline.ag. NASCAR and Formula One and EPL is in full swing, and there's no shortage of ways to get in on the action. Do you need more? BetOnline has simulated NFL Madden games, NBA 2K and UFC happening every single day for you to watch live and to wager on if you so choose. And as sports get closer to returning, BetOnline has future odds on everything you can imagine, season win totals, division odds, and even odds on every league championship. Visit betonline.ag or use your mobile device to join now and use your promo code podcast1 to receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering experts. Visit our good friends and exclusive partner at podcast1, BetOnline, to take advantage of the best bonuses in the business. That's promo code podcast1, betonline.ag, your online sportsbook experts. Go Cubs. And so I take issue with anyone who says that they're going to stop. There is zero evidence at all that the left has ever stopped, that they've ever been satisfied with just making sure that abortion is safe, legal, and rare. Instead, there's evidence to show that they want abortion to be ubiquitous and glamorized with the Shout Your Abortion movement. There is no evidence to show that once the left bans semi-automatic weapons, that they're somehow not going to want to go after handguns, which they have done all across the country. The left is a relentless force to try to debase and destroy everything that we care about in our country. And so to understand the left is to understand the thinkers that built the philosophy around this insidious and dangerous thought process. They're not content with beauty. They're not content with order because they don't believe in either of those things. They don't believe in absolute or objective truth. So when you think about that, we as conservatives, we, a lot of you listening, are Christians. We believe in absolute truth. There is a God who loves us, that wants us to have eternal life. Okay, when you have a commitment to that truth, all of a sudden you want to preserve the laws of nature and of nature's God. Where is that sentence first said? The Declaration of Independence, and previously by John Locke. But the left, first of all, they do not believe in God. And if they do, it's a different type of relationship with God. But most of them do not believe in God, especially the radical fundamentalist ideologues. So therefore, if you don't believe in God and you don't believe in absolute truth, you're going to try to find that truth by designing the country or the world or public policy towards a utopian model. The left believes that these institutions are corrupt because they are part of hierarchies. Hierarchies of power and hierarchies of oppression. It's a whole nother conversation that we can have about how hierarchies are natural, hierarchies are necessary, hierarchies are healthy, and hierarchies are inevitable. The issue is that the left completely and totally rejects that hierarchies are ever needed at all. We've talked about this at length here on the Charlie Kirk Show about how Jean-Jacques Rousseau, he said, I value the infant over the adult, the primitive over the civilized. The root of their argument is that there is systemic oppression in Western society. There is oppression in private property. There is oppression in commerce. There is oppression in individuals having the right to speak. There is oppression in absolute truth. And so when you think about it, a lot of what the left is trying to create is a return back to indigenous roots, a return away from private property, but to collective ownership, to go back away almost to Incan socialism. And there is evidence that in Peru, the Incan Empire, they lived in a very communal socialistic state. It didn't work out that well. They actually disappeared and or starved off the face of the earth. But when you have this conversation of my truth, your truth, it's really an attack on God and his hierarchy and an exclusive claim of truth. So I read this article from The Atlantic, and it proves it perfectly. First comes police reform, then comes everything else. So they begin with George Floyd and the evil murder of George Floyd, which then becomes an excuse to destroy Mount Rushmore. So you have an evil cop in Minneapolis, and then you go destroy a monument where over 3 million people visit every single year and has become one of the incredible symbols of the greatest country ever to exist in the history of the world. How is that possible? Because the slippery slope exists. And now you see the direction that the left is going to try to create a tribal, primitive America, not an industrialized Western egalitarian America around natural rights, but instead almost try to return us back to 2nd century BC, where people were quite indigenous. And I'm not saying that it's necessarily derogatory, but it is inherently regressive. It just is. Where freedom of speech was not protected, when, guess what, slavery existed, when people were judged on their skin color, not their character. And you have Jamal Bowman. He defeated Elliot Engel to win a June primary in New York's 16th congressional district. He believes in a Reconstruction agenda, which includes free college, a wealth tax, baby bonds. But his agenda really begins with reconciling with history, that reconciliation would inevitably require some form of reparations. I've talked about at length why reparations are incredibly racist. Do I get reparations because my great uncle 7 generations ago fought in the Civil War to help free the slaves? Do I get reparations for that? No, that would be foolish, right? Because I didn't do that. So therefore, why should I have to pay for something that I didn't do, that no one in my family did? In fact, the opposite. My family contributed to the betterment of Black America, not the detriment of Black America. I can trace my Kirk roots all the way back to guess what year? Guess the first year that the Kirks came to North America, 1620. 1 year after the first slaves arrived under English colonial rule. However, my ancestors fought in the Revolutionary War. Abner Abbey was the individual who fought in the Revolutionary War and is buried in Boston to this day. It's on my father's mother's side. So what reparations do I have to pay, for example? What do I have to apologize for our nation's history? By the way, the Reconstruction agenda that Jamal Brown mentions is in reference to the post-Civil War Reconstruction era. 40 acres and a mule idea. This is the new Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, by the way. He is proposing truly radical, progressive ideas. But this isn't reform in keeping with nature and of nature's God. This is a revolution against America. So that's a very good compass to guide all this on. If someone is proposing something away from natural rights and away from how human beings are needed to flourish, pause carefully. Not all progress is good. In fact, some progress can be really bad. I had this conversation once with a leftist on a campus. She said, all progress is good. I said, all progress is good? She says, yes, our society is so awful, it needs to change always. I said, okay. How about laws that prohibit pedophilia? You get rid of those? And she said, no, I wouldn't get rid of those. I said, well, maybe something shouldn't change then. Maybe some things are actually the way they should be. In fact, in some ways, we have things better than we could ever possibly realize as far as equality under the law, expression, freedom of consciousness and of thought. And by the way, this is why Martin Luther King Jr.'s reforms on civil rights were so good, because he called for all men being equal, judging one by the contents of their character, which is a biblical idea. And it goes back to the Bible verse that inspired the foundation of Western society, that you are made in the image of God, Galatians 3:28, where it says, there is neither Jew nor Greek, slave nor free, male nor female, for you are all one in Christ Jesus. BLM is a regression movement, not a progressive movement. They say they're progressive. Reality, they want to bring us back to tribal warfare. And mind you, we should not be on the side of progress. This is the lie of the left. Sometimes things should not change. Sometimes things should be preserved and kept intact. That's the root of conservatism. Let me give you an example of this. In fact, I actually want to go back to how some things used to be. Not back to tribal roots. I want to go back to when families did not have a 50% chance of being broken up through divorce. I would love to go back to when, as a society, most of our country spoke English. I'd love to go back to a time when we made most of the products we consumed here in America. I'd love to go back to a time when we did not borrow $2 trillion every single year. I'd love to go back to a time when the church was the center of the community. So if it means to be a progressive, to go back to when families used to stay together, I guess, but no. It's a conservative, because by definition, by being a conservative, you say, this is true, this is right, let's conserve those things. Those things are life. Those things are the family. Those things are work. Those things are private property. Those things are charity. Those things are the church. Those things are things that give you meaning. The left has never advocated anything that has given a human being meaning. Instead, the left has only advocated for things that give human beings madness and misery. The left will only advocate for things that make human beings short-term pleased, long-term miserable. The left, they are experts. And I should really define what I mean more by the left. I mean people that believe in the fundamental transformation and destabilization of our country. People like Bernie Sanders, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and also Nancy Pelosi, who protects for them. We as conservatives have to stand for what is righteous, what is true, and what is good in opposition to the radicals. And so I see very clearly where this is headed. As BLM Inc. is trying to fundamentally destroy the fabric of our country, they're trying to be arsonists for America, we have to stand firm against their diabolical agenda, because one small inch that we give the left, they're going to take a mile. That is why we went so firm against Senator Mike Braun. That is why when we stood up against Republican Senator Mike Braun and we saw that he was trying to appease the left through qualified immunity police reform, and he said a good thing about BLM Inc., and he later sent out a press release that seems like he reversed course. And I actually think that is a really good teaching moment for us conservatives, because people say, well, Charlie, what can I do? Give clear, easy to understand, impossible to screw up instructions to Republican lawmakers. They need those instructions. So any Republican out there listening that's a lawmaker, don't say good things about BLM Inc. That's probably a good starting point. Anything that groups people on skin color, not character, bad organization. These are good and necessary points of reference. The current movements in America want to bring us back to tribalism. And it's actually proven through the slippery slope. It's not a fallacy. It is, in fact, factual, especially dealing with an entire political movement that is rooted in the endless, relentless, and committed destabilization of what is good, what is true, and what is righteous in our beautiful country. Whether you're new to the gym or you've been lifting weights for years, it's hard to find the right workout program and stick to it. If you've ever gone to a gym without a plan, you know how overwhelming the weight room can feel. Even with a trainer, it can be hard to know if you're pushing yourself too much or not enough. So during the pandemic, we all have to work out at home, and Fitbod allows you to do it. They tailored workouts. I like the way it balances my muscle groups, and I feel totally recovered. I have to tell you that Fitbod is the way to go. Fitbod combines the knowledge of fitness pros with a powerful machine learning algorithm to give you a workout program that maximizes your results. You can get a program tailored to your unique body, experience, and environment. No equipment, no worries at all whatsoever. Fitbod has bodyweight routines for those looking to get fit at home or on the go. Fitbod is super easy to use and even has HD video tutorials to make learning new exercises a breeze. Get a personalized fitness plan that helps you work out smarter at fitbod.me/Kirk. Try Fitbod for 1 month when you sign up today at fitbod.me/Kirk. Now, as evidence of what I just said previously, Barry Weiss, who is one of the few conservative-leaning writers at the New York Times, and she's really just an old-school liberal, not a leftist, in an illiberal newsroom, she dropped a bomb on the failing New York Times. So she basically resigned recently in the last 24 to 48 hours, and she went down in a blaze of incredible glory. And I want to have her on the podcast, and we're trying to actually get her on the Charlie Kirk Show to help her promote her book. I don't know if it's going to happen or not, but we'll see. So she read, this is part of her stunning and scathing rebuke of the New York Times. It said, quote, "My own forays into wrongthink have made me the subject of constant bullying by colleagues who disagree with my views. They have called me a Nazi and a racist. I've learned to brush off comments about how I'm, quote, writing about the Jews things again." Mind you, Weiss is Jewish herself. She continued by saying, "Several colleagues perceived to be friendly with me were badgered by coworkers. My work and my character are openly demeaned on a company-wide Slack channel where masthead editors regularly weigh in." This is so evident. This is so obvious. It's obviously an open, hostile environment for conservatives at the New York Times. But she continues by saying, "Part of me wishes I could stay there. Part of me wishes I could say that my experience was unique. But the truth is that intellectual curiosity, let alone risk-taking, is now a liability at the New York Times. And it's becoming a liability all across America. It starts on college campuses and ends up in the halls of Congress and in the boardrooms of places like New York Times. What happens on campuses will happen in the halls of Congress and in American culture. I say this all the time at Turning Point USA. I say that the leading indicator is what happens on campuses. So we allow this virus to spread, and we once thought what was happening on our college campuses would be like Chernobyl, just a nuclear spill dump or a waste dump, when in reality it was a pathogen. It is a virus. It is incubated. It is spread. And it has spread to newsrooms all across the country. And this is really what Jonah Goldberg talked about many years ago in his book, Liberal Fascism. Jonah Goldberg, who hates Donald Trump, who's incredibly brilliant, and I think he's just wrong on a lot of things, but I give people credit when they get things correctly. And Jonah Goldberg really hit it perfectly in his book, Liberal Fascism, and he was crucified for what he said. Jonah Goldberg predicted that liberals will eventually become fascists. They will not be able to resist themselves because that's where it always ends up. And his biggest argument was Benito Mussolini, Joseph Stalin. You can't argue for total control over a society and then also think that once you have that control over society, you're not going to abuse that control over society. And Jonah Goldberg, again, is so wrong on Trump, and he's actually been a jerk to me on Twitter, but I'm not going to actually respond with insults. I'm actually going to respond to compliments of where he's right because he's a very smart individual when it comes to this. He argues that conservatism is rooted in gratitude. He's right. If you do not have gratitude for something and you have ingratitude, then you want to destroy that something around you. So this is inevitable for the New York Times, is that the left have now become the fascists that they claim to hate. They stamp out opposition opinion. They bully people in the streets. We have gone through piece by piece of the human cost of the digital annihilation culture, of the assassination culture that exists in the American left about how they want to boycott and destroy anyone with differing or dissenting opinion. And you see this with Barry Weiss in this micro example at the New York Times. Weiss finishes by saying, why edit something challenging to our readers or write something bold only to go through the numbing process of making it ideologically kosher, where we can assure ourselves of job security and clicks by publishing our 4,000th op-ed arguing that Donald Trump is a unique danger to the country and the world, and so self-censorship has become the norm. Good for you, Barry Weiss. She's a true liberal. She's a true free speech, free thought liberal. I can see why leftists hate her. I can see why radical ideologues that quite honestly are miserable themselves want to destroy people like her and Tom Cotton and anyone else. And Tom Cotton exposed all this, by the way. Tom Cotton is the reason why Barry Weiss has resigned at the New York Times. It's basically because of Tom Cotton and the entire incident around that. And her editor resigned because of it. Now she, of course, leaves the New York Times. The New York Times is now Pravda. The New York Times is basically Soviet-published propaganda. They're a Politburo. They're no different. And Barry Weiss has exposed their anti-Semitism, their Jew hatred, and the propaganda mill that the New York Times has become. And yet they're still the paper of record. They have record amounts of subscribers. They're in records amount of classrooms. They get push notifications through Apple News. They have record amounts of traffic and huge amounts of influence through all multimedia channels. And here's one of the big problems, is that conservatives continue to give comment and give credence to the New York Times. They just do. And by the way, I refused to give comment to the New York Times when they did a story on me during the shutdowns of the Chinese coronavirus. I will say this, though. I am happy to use their silly little list on authors to my advantage because they hate me so much. The fact that I became a New York Times best-selling author, I'm happy to advocate and be proud of. Just have to say, that's kind of cool. To be a New York Times best-selling author, considering how awful they are, I just think it all kind of comes full circle there. Because they wanted at every part of them to keep me off the list. Every single part of them. And we actually made number 4 on the New York Times bestseller list. MAGA Doctrine. And they did write a review. Might have been number 3. Number 3 or number 4. We have to check that out. So to close it all together, when you analyze the news cycle and you tell your friends and you tell your liberal relatives, well, if we do this, more things are going to happen. They say, oh, that's a slippery slope. That's dismissive. No, it's evidence-based. You can see very clearly that we have confirmation and that we have a track record of Democrats, Marxists, liberal fascists that are using the power that they have assumed to silence, to ridicule, and to punish anyone that might disagree with them. They're going to try to take our weapons. They're going to try to take our speech. They're going to try to take our property. If you understand the left, and by listening to this program, you absolutely will, you'll have a better and more complete understanding of how to defeat them, and with that, save our country. Listen to our sister episode with Roger Stone, everybody. Email me your questions, freedom@charliekirk.com, freedom@charliekirk.com. I would love to answer any questions for you. We do an AMA every single Monday. If you want to win a signed copy of the New York Times bestseller, MAGA Doctrine, type in Charlie Kirk Show, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review. Charlie Kirk Show, hit subscribe, give us a 5-star review. I'd love to send you a signed copy of the New York Times bestseller, The MAGA Doctrine. Thank you for supporting our program at charliekirk.com/support. charliekirk.com/support. Please be, consider becoming a monthly supporter. We're doing a video call next week for our monthly supporters, charliekirk.com/support. It helps protect us from leftist boycotts. Check out Turning Point USA, tpusa.com, tpusa.com. And again, email us any questions you have, freedom@charliekirk.com. Thank you guys so much for listening. We have Senator Ted Cruz tomorrow, so make sure you're subscribed. God bless you, and God bless our beautiful country.